This is the Land and Legacy Podcast, brought to you by Whitetail Properties Real Estate. We're your hosts, Adam Keith.
And Matt Dye. This is your weekly resource for habitat management, wildlife management, and recreational real estate. We hope you guys enjoy the show. All right, guys. One of the most important questions that we get is, what's your favorite tool to use for land management? Now, outside of like the drip torch and chainsaw and stuff like that, my common answer and truthful answer is Onyx. Whether I'm in the field, whether I'm in the office, Onyx is open. iPad, iPhone, desktop version, it doesn't matter. To be the best land manager, you have to have a plan in place. And we use Onyx to build our plans and supplement our reports with this amazing tool. If you know how to organize information within the folders and build a continuous plan and schedule, this tool is your friend. It will keep you organized. It will keep you on task. It will create the vision in which you have a hunt strategy built around a farm. The tools are so numerous. If you have some creativity, you can build some amazing things that are going to keep you and the property developed and allow you to execute it to its fullest potential. Through the Onyx app, we use it religiously, and it is one of the most important tools that we're going to utilize and encourage everyone else to utilize as well. If you're trying to maximize your recreational property, you need to have information stored and know the direction in which you're heading. And that is why we use Onyx Maps. Across the board, Land Legacy consultants are using this app. Get yourself on the app, upload your information, create a plan, and to save yourself some money on the elite version of the app, use the code LEGACY20 at checkout, and that'll get you 20% off of your subscription for that elite membership, guys. You won't regret it. Dive into the app. The tools are so numerous. You can create some awesome stuff there. OnyxMaps.com or in the App Store.
All right, guys. Welcome back to another Land and Legacy Podcast. It's your host, Matt Dye. We are rocking through the fall and into the winter. What feels like Mr. Winter has hit a lot of the Midwest, a lot of the kind of Northeast. Man, it's gotten cold, and it looks like it's going to stay cold. A lot of places got dumped on with snow or got their first skiffs of snow, and it's dramatically changing the way in which you hunt, because guess what? Deer reacting to it. Standing grain is now a hot commodity. Again, if you're in the Midwest or in an area that's got any sort of tillable component to it, or you're just a food plotting machine and you've got snow on the ground, it feels like late season already. But still, post rut at the time of recording this on December the 1st. But I don't know exactly when this thing is going to drop necessarily. However, this information is still pertinent. It is still very valuable for really any time of the season. And we're going to jump on here with Alan Summerford, Land and Legacy Consultant, as he talks about his season, him and his son's season, and the consistency or lack thereof of some of the deer that they've harvested on trail cameras. And so you've heard us talk so much about trail camera placement before on other podcasts. And this is just a really good reminder of the way in which we should use trail cameras and the way in which we should receive and perceive the information that is collected through a trail camera image and what it means. There's a varying degree of quality of placement of trail cameras, right? They can be out present in the woods, pointed in the wrong direction, set up poorly, and just a huge wide range of information can be collected from them based on the placement. But there's a certain point in which your own brain needs to kick in and say, hey, I need to now put the pieces together because this is just some information. It is a tool in the toolbox. It is not the only tool you use to know whether you hunt or you do not hunt a given property or a given farm or a given region of a farm. This should just be used to say, hey, this buck is frequent or infrequent on a given property. So, with that being said, guys, it's going to be a great podcast. I want you to listen to it with an open mind and just be ready to learn something and understand, right, more and more about the tool in which we can utilize and play into, but just not completely rely on from a hunting strategy. So, hope you enjoy the podcast. But before we jump in, just a quick reminder on the consulting side of things. We are booking up very rapidly, so appreciate all the requests that are coming through, the inquiries, and we're fielding those as quickly as possible and getting back to you. So we just are grateful for that. So keep that coming as we build out the 2026 schedule. We work across the country. We've currently worked in 32 different states. So if you're thinking about it, send us an email. But we'll talk about the different options that we offer, and likely one of us has already worked in your area in the past. It can be very different from the Midwest. Yes, we are located in southern Missouri, but we travel to Florida, Montana, Texas, Maine, and everywhere in between that. So we've worked in that landscape before. And we often get those questions, but that's kind of a rough overview of, the four corners, let's say, of where we work and everything in between there. So anyways, so grateful for each and every opportunity and inquiry. So we appreciate that. Guys, just let us know if you have any questions. But without further ado, let's join, excuse me, join Mr. Alan Summerford on the podcast here. Alrighty, guys, welcome back. I've got Alan Summerford, Land Legacy Consultant for us in the Southeast. He is joining me this week on the podcast because he's a big buck killer, and so is his son Reed. And we got some stories to tell and share, and some great insight that I think you guys are going to really enjoy for the podcast this week that I hope you can apply to your own situation. So, Alan, what's up, man?
Man, it's good. We're finally getting into the good time of the season, the good time of year where bucks are up on their feet, they're moving, and we finally get to capitalize.
That's right. It's always different for you, and I always love hearing. Of course, you got several different places to be able to hunt in little different eco regions there in the South. So your rut, pre-rut situations are varying, and they're varying from us in the Midwest. But you've got places that are heating up right now, about peak, and then other ones that are 20, 25 days away from being lights out. So, but I think we've done one other podcast throughout the fall, and your fall has been quite a bit different than many other falls for you, just with the schedule of what's been going on in your life and commitments that has limited the amount of time that you've been able to spend in the woods between Reed's ball schedule, cattle, and just life in general. You haven't hunted all that much, and I know you've been having the itch to be able to get out and be like, man, I'm not seeing any, I'm not killing anything because guess what? I'm not going.
Yeah, and then the very few times I did go, I did not see much at all. It was pretty slow. Had one good sit in all of bow season. The deer I was after was walking straight to me and fixing to come hit a scrape that I'd made, and he was walking the tree line headed right straight to it. Then the other buck that I would have probably shot stepped out on the other side of the field, and they met in the middle and started fighting till dark. And I was like, my goodness, you got to be
Cool
kidding me.
encounter, but
Sharks.
yeah, cool encounter, but
But
bro.
Other than that, man, my encounters were pretty far in between. They were very, it was very slow fall. Just the amount of acorns this year is just unbelievable. And then the hot temperatures we have had, you know, last week we were in the 80s. So
Right.
we've had some really, really tough conditions to try to hunt in. And so it's like when I did get to go, the conditions were pretty poor to be able to see quality deer. So
Sure,
I think
sure.
this is the latest I've ever gone and not killed a deer. The very first deer I killed this year was the day before Thanksgiving. I shot a doe. So that just is pretty rare for me.
Well, it sounds like you broke the ice with the doe, and then from there, you fell deep into the deep end.
Yeah, no doubt. Got the monkey off the back, and then it's go time.
It's all out war. Awesome. Awesome. Well, yeah, no, it's different, obviously, with raising a family and having a career and the schedules and everything that just comes along with that. And whether it's sick family sicknesses with young kids, something just always, yes, wants to pop up and alter your plans that we draw up in our own brain. And it's like, okay, we have to adjust sometimes that perspective of what a fall or opportunity is going to look like. So I'm glad though that you've been able to strike and capitalize on the past week's time. Now, to give it away, the title probably gives the podcast away as to some of the take home message here. But I want you to just share the stories of the harvest. But I'm going to introduce the topic. You're going to share the hunts, and then we're going to really dive into the topic after we talk about the hunts themselves. But not every hunt, not every deer that gets harvested or that you chase is going to show up regularly on a trail camera situation. But that does not mean that that deer is not huntable. Is not in a huntable pattern and that he should not be pursued. So, with that being said, tell us the stories of the hunts for this deer or the two deer that were harvested, because it's I really want to get to that message. And there's caveats and there's no way to, capture every single scenario with that statement. But oftentimes we see too much of reliance on trail camera information and not enough in the field observations to complete the story of what's actually happening in the woods, right? You're living, oftentimes we see landowners, hunters living through the lens of that trail camera or the trail camera system that's out, and they make judgment calls based on only what is observed through the lens of that static, stationary, pointed one direction camera. And that can lead to a lot of falsehood. So tell us the story of the hunt and then let's break down that trail camera activity afterwards.
Yeah, so we start with Reed killed two bucks over the week, and I killed
That's right.
one.
That's right.
So we'll start with the very first. We'll just go by timeline when the deer were killed. So we're hunting a farm that I don't have any cameras on whatsoever, and we got
How in the world did you know where to even go?
Yeah, there's literally, this is Alabama. It's legal to bait. Everybody baits. There's no feed whatsoever on this farm unless we've got a hog trap running. We've just got food plots and pines and a little bit of hardwood timber here and there. Anyways, so yeah, how do you know where to go? That's a great question. Basically, we go where the wind's good, and I think that day it was like 82 degrees. It was blistering hot, and I thought, I'm gonna hunt somewhere where there's shade, where the food plot's gonna be shaded. And that we're going to kill a doe. And first doe that walks out, re-blast it, drops it on the field. 20, 30 minutes later, buck steps out, he drops him on the field. So that's about all there is to that hunt. We hunted a field because it was shaded and it was really, really hot. And it was near a little creek. Like I thought all the things that would go together, like if we're going to see a buck, this is probably the field that we're going to see it on. And sure enough, it came through. All right. Now we rewind the tape just a little bit. It is the week before Thanksgiving. I've had two cameras running on two food plots on a smaller property in North Alabama. And this is a property that I've had a lot of success on over the years. And I know that the time to kill the deer on this property is usually the week of Thanksgiving. That's when I've killed the majority of the bucks. So I've had cameras running. One camera is on a scrape on a food plot, and the other camera is on a scrape on a food plot that actually has a feeder about 40, 50 yards off the food plot. Camera's not pointed at the feeder, but it will catch a deer possibly going to the feeder. All right, no pictures whatsoever of anything whatsoever that I would even think about hunting.
Right.
Don't even think that there's a deer over there. In fact, the deer that I was really hoping to see, I think, died last year. He was about 9 or 10 years old. Nothing, not a scoring machine, nothing, just a cool old deer. And I was really hoping to catch him on one of the cameras. I normally always do, but he hadn't shown up, so I'm pretty sure he might have finally died of old age. But I go in there, I like, this is the week before the week that I like to hunt. I'm like, I ain't put any corn out in about a month. I'm gonna put some out in the trough and just kind of check both plots and just kind of see if I see any activity. Well,
How is the condition of the plots with the fall
plots
you
look
see?
great. Man, my plots are awesome. Like probably some
Good.
of the best plots this year I've ever had. I think it's
Yeah.
a combination of two things. I caught timely rain
Yeah.
on all of my plots that were in North Alabama
Yep.
and Tennessee. And there's a ton of acorns. I mean, it's impossible to hunt a feed tree this year. There's so many acorns. You can't find a tree that is hot because they're everywhere. And then on top of that, I think, the plots look good because the deer aren't really hammering the plots.
Yeah.
They're filling up on acorns and just, gradually eating the plots.
Oh yeah.
So
The
anyways,
annoying kind of hunting.
annoying kind of hunting. Like it's very, very, very difficult to pattern a deer. But where you can pattern a deer is all that changes when the rut comes.
Right.
Everything, if you're not patterning deer during the early season, well, when the rut comes, they're getting on their feet a lot more. They're traveling a lot more. They're doing all the things that they would normally do in the normal places that they would do them. So the I hung a camera. I saw the camera. I was on the way to the camera. I saw this scrape the size of the hood of a pickup truck. And I'm like, oh my goodness. And it was fresh. I mean, fresh, fresh. I was like, I need to get the camera off the food plot, pull it back to this scrape, see what's up. So go in there, move the camera, go around to the other food plot, pour the corn out, leave.
Yep.
Deer shows up. I should have just hunted. The deer shows up that afternoon on the scrape. Didn't show up anywhere near the corn,
Yep.
500 yards away from the corn.
How far away are we talking here?
500 yards away from the corn.
Yep.
And still not coming to the corn.
Yep.
And
And
so,
or a perfect food plot.
and no perfect food plot. In fact, that food plot's the one that I normally hunt,
Yeah.
the one that has the corn close to it.
Right.
But I have not had any success over there in years. So, anyways, I checked that scrape, I see that scrape, move the camera to it. He shows up at that scrape, and I'm like, in daylight. I'm like, wow, that's pretty good. Next day, I get south winds, can't hunt it on a south wind. He daylights again on that scrape. I'm like, man. Well, then we're taking off. We're leaving for Thanksgiving break to go south. So
Yep.
I am sitting there like, oh, I've got to get back to that tree. I got to get back to that tree. And I'm like, I know we're coming home for Thanksgiving. Family. So
Right.
I'm sitting there, I'm hunting in South Alabama where, nothing exciting is really happening. We're kind of hunting, cover to food pattern, warm temperatures, it's not a lot moving.
It's your rut's still a month away down there.
Rut's still a month away down
Yep.
there. And I'm sitting there thinking in my mind, when I go home, I've got to go hunt that deer.
Yep.
So, but I hadn't got another picture of him. I'm like, man, He hadn't shown back up. They must already be chasing or, you know, what's going
Right.
on? I still know, like, okay, I'm planning on going and hunting that deer. This is how they've always done the, I mean, I've killed bucks in there. There's a transition line. They run that transition line between, there's like timber, cover, timber. And one timber has been really hard select cut about 7 or 8 years ago. So it's gnarly thick. And then an old field unit. And then timber that's not been cut, but I've put a bedding thicket in. And so, like, I've got a transition line. And if I get on that transition line, I'll usually see whatever buck is in the area. So we drive home Wednesday night. Rebecca's like, "Why are you taking your stuff home? We're going to come right back down here." I said, "No, I'm going to hunt that deer." She's like, "You ain't hunted a morning down here all week. Why are you going to hunt a morning at home?" I'm like, "Because it's the rut. This is the week I always do it." She's like, she goes, "Okay, whatever." So I jump up Thanksgiving morning, go climb up in a tree. I get them up one stick high because
I
they're
would say
crazy.
I've seen your picture. You weren't high in a tree. So when you say you jumped
No.
in a tree, you literally probably could have just jumped in this tree. Why did you set up like that?
Okay, so that area, that's where that's the timber that I'd select cut. And my food plot is about 100 yards farther in where I normally try to hunt that area. And back on this side of it, I had a north wind, and I'm like, and the scrape is 100 yards south of the food plot. And then it's another 50 yards from that scrape to the edge of the timber where it's just a big open cattle pasture. And I was like, well, I need to be downwind of the scrape. I need to be on the downwind side of all the thick. And right there at that spot, it's either 200, 300-year-old oak trees with big old gigantic sprawling limbs and or it's a little bitty tiny scrubby tree with, you know, and it's a lot of like, it's pretty high stem count, you know, a lot of thick stuff that's really low. So if you get
Not
high, you can't
gigantic.
shoot. And if you're on the ground, you can't see. So I took one stick and my platform. I hung the stick and the platform standing on the ground about chest high. And then I climbed up in the a little bitty sapling. There was a limb, big limb that had blown down, and it was blowing. It blew down across that little tree. The tree is smaller than my waist, but that limb that blew down, it gave me breakup cover behind me. So I was like, if I climbed any higher than that, I'm climbed up out of the cover.
And then you're start getting into canopy and not be able
Canopy
to
that
shoot as
can't shoot.
far.
So I was basically where I could see underneath everything to shoot, but you know, just low enough. So, anyways, climb up in there, and immediately at daybreak, I'm already seeing bucks like cruising through. And there was two different bucks that crossed my
How
food.
far? Say cruising through, how far away were they? And then how far off from the downwind side of that scrape were you seeing them transition?
So those bucks were actually crossing my food plot. I could see them in my food. I can't shoot my food plot. It's like 100 and something yards to the edge of it. And I saw them cross it. And it literally, it's like they're crossing it. And I'm just trying to see what deer it is. And I grabbed my grunt call on both of them just to slow them down to see what deer it was. Both of them were not shooters. And well, they stopped. Look my way, back on their path, they kept going. I'm like, okay. Well, then I had a doe come trying to slip around. She was trying to get behind me. And had I been any farther up, she would have got my wind and for sure would have busted me. But she slipped around and she actually came and worked the scrape. And then I saw another buck crossing the food plot. And I'm like, ah, that's a pretty nice deer. And I was trying to get another look at him. So I grabbed my grunt call again. I went brat, 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 to get him to stop. He stopped and he looked and I'm like, nope, he's not the one I'm after. And it wasn't 10 minutes later. I turned around and looked behind me, kind of coming from behind me, and he was just slipping through the thick stuff. And I'm like, that's him.
That's the one.
He was trying to get downwind of me calling, and downwind of the whole entire thicket, and he was about to do it. Like, I was about 20 yards from the edge, and being that low on the ground, I knew my scent. He was going to catch my
Oh,
scent.
sure.
And so I turn around backwards on the tree, standing on the platform, free-handed, and he's walking behind this giant ash tree. And I'm like, when he steps out on the other side of that ash tree, I've got a little window to shoot. And
How far is he?
he's at 35 yards
Yeah, close.
close. And mind you, I'm in a little bitty tree 5 feet off the ground. And then if he takes about five more steps, he gets my wind. So I went meh right when he's stepping into my hole, and he took two more steps out of my hole, and I'm like, oh no, this is not good. So he's looking my way. I'm standing there, and I'm like free-handed, trying to freeze and trying to hold on him, hoping he'll turn back the other way. His head went down, and he could smell right where I'd walked in on, and he got all nervous. And I'm like, well, here we go. We'll see if
Yeah,
he
what rodeo is about
boogers up
to
or what he
unfold?
does. And so he kind of like picks his head up. He swivels around, looks both directions. He still hadn't gotten my wind yet. And he just bounces two bounces out and stops. And I mean, I got a tiny little window to shoot through, but it was a clear shot of the vitals. He's at 40 yards. I swing up on him, bam, drop him in his tracks. So but he was doing exactly what I thought he was going to do. He's working that transition line. He was basically taking the whole downwind approach of the food plot, the thicket, and he was going to go on a line going through the whole property of, I'm going to check this whole entire thing on the corridor that's the easiest for me to travel to check this whole block of thick. And I probably would not have got another picture of him even that day. My camera was about,
But he was there.
but he was there. My camera was about 50 yards from where I was climbed. He basically probably walked within 40 yards of the camera at one point in time. And so, you know, knowing that it's the right time of year, knowing how that property works and where where deer are bedded, where deer are going to travel, and where bucks are going to try to figure out where the deer are bedded, you know, you don't have to have a picture of the deer to know that, like, when it's the right time of year, you're getting in there downwind side of bedding, and you're hunting. You're not relying on a camera to tell you to go hunt.
The question is, how today is this deer going to be moving through this area? I know he's using this area from previous intel that the camera has given me,
Yes.
but all gets a little bit thrown out the window during that phase of the rut and that time of the year. And so it becomes less important of, okay, I need to check my cameras, tell me where. No. They already told you what to do.
Yes.
How today is the target or any other mature deer going to be wisely moving through if he's not with a doe? How would he be using this timber block with today's conditions, winds, thermals, etc., etc.? And the sign had already told you, hey, I need to be here. Then the cameras reinforce it. And then that day says, oh, under these conditions, I'm going to set up like X and be in there. And you just were present. But it had been what, 6 days?
It had been 6 days since I had a picture of the deer.
And I want to, honestly ask yourself, and this doesn't apply to everybody, but honestly ask yourself, like, if you hadn't gotten pictures, folks, of a buck in 6 days, that's a long time for a lot of people. A lot of people want to see, like, this certain deer every single day, or at least give me a picture of that deer every 3 days.
All right, guys, if you are thinking about buying or selling land, period, you need to do yourself a favor and go check out whitetailproperties.com. The professionalism, the ethic that is just incorporated into the brand and to the land agents themselves, those who you would be working with in your respective region, is second to none. Adam and I have had the pleasure of working with a lot of different folks and a lot of different transactions across lots of different states, but One thing definitely rings true is the caliber in which Whitetail Properties works at. So you owe it to yourself to go check out them online at whitetailproperties.com. Browse their properties. Or if you are interested in seeing what your property may bring, go contact a land agent in your region. They are rapidly growing and spreading across the country. About 40 different states now, they have land agents and representatives in your region. So make sure you check them out, whitetailproperties.com.
Would you have gone to that spot thinking you had any chance of that deer? And I think if people were honest with themselves, a lot would likely say those who rely too heavily on trail camera information to know where to hunt, likely a lot of people would say, no, I would not have gone. I would have sat at home, or I wouldn't have gone to that farm, or I would have gone and sat at the food plot where I could see farther. I would have done something totally different and likely not had the same outcome as you did. But trail cameras are incredible tools. But I think we need to learn how to perceive and receive that information and utilize that information. Like, we still have an intelligent brain we need to utilize that says, how do I apply this information? Not how do I only rely on this information?
So I want to, for our listeners to understand, like, I do not necessarily hunt over my trail cameras. There may be times where I do hunt over my trail camera because, like, well, that's just where the best spot for that trail camera is. But there's a lot of times where I will put the trail camera where I'm using the trail camera to tell me that a deer is in the area.
Yeah.
Sometimes it might be a nighttime picture. Sometimes but I know the deer is going to daylight on the farm based on how he uses that area. But I just need the camera to tell me what is there. It's not telling me a whole lot of when. It's not telling me a whole lot of how. It's mainly just telling me, is there a deer there that I want to hunt? That's the main thing that I'm using cameras for. I don't get a lot of patterning off of trail cameras. There are some patterns, and we'll talk about that for Reed's deer. There are some patterns that I have seen from bucks, but are usually really, really hard to capitalize on because of the amount of chances that I get to hunt. And, and things are changing so fast in the whitetail world where our season opens, October 15th. And, in North Alabama, they're already rutting by Thanksgiving. So, like, it's hard to, you got a week or two to pattern a deer. And if you don't catch that pattern in that first week or two, things change so fast with acorns falling, all the different things kind of coming through, and then the rut kind of starting to happen. So, like, sometimes patterns don't really work that well if you're in an area where the season opens up and then all these different changes are happening. Leaf drop, that's a huge one.
Huge change.
Instantly change
Yep.
what deer are doing. And so,
cover types, everything.
So, you don't have to rely on how consistent a deer is on your camera to go hunt. Just rely on the camera to tell you that, hey, this buck is in the area, and then understand how to go hunt the buck based on the bucks in the area. How have you designed your food plots? How have you designed your layout of your property, your stand access, and all of those things kind of tell you where to hunt. When the buck just shows up in a 100-acre block, hey, now you figure out the strategy to go kill him.
Yeah. It helps you identify a target in a general region area of a farm to potentially intercept that target.
Yeah.
But and there's,
I will say, good camera placement will tell you what is on the farm. I hear people say all the time, like, I've never seen that deer before, never seen that deer before. And I get it. There's going to be sometimes during the rut where a deer just shows up from out of nowhere that comes to the farm and you get a picture of him, or you see him in shooting, whatever. But so far in the past 10 years, at least 10 years, maybe longer, I've never killed a deer that I didn't already have a picture of.
Yeah.
It's never happened.
Yeah.
Like, I keep hoping that one will be there, but it's never happened. So my camera strategy has worked really well to tell me what's there.
Yeah.
But it doesn't always tell you, I don't ever have a deer that's just showing up 3 days in a row at the same spot that I'm gonna go kill.
Yeah, there, and I really haven't had that either. It's like just like 3 days in a row, bang, bang, bang. I'm going in there fourth day, same bang.
Yeah,
Early
that happened to
season,
me.
early season, I've had deer. I'm not killed on that, but I've had deer do that. Like other deer, non-targets, whatever. It's like, yep, that deer is super consistent, but like not killed on that type of pattern ever on a trail camera. But again, one of the caveats to this is you can only have so many cameras, right? And the gradient or scale of which I would say quality of placement of the trail camera again will determine how much you should rely on that, right? But there's a point in which you rely on that information from a trail camera, it has to stop. Where again, hunter woodsmanship mindset then takes over and furthers the improvement of a strategy, right? If your only strategy is, I didn't see the deer on camera, he's not consistent on camera, I'm not hunting. That's what we're trying to say is that's not a strong strategy. There's way more to it. There's a lot of people who put cameras in places that are just like, I would never put a camera right there. And they don't get
Man,
good
I
information.
see that so often when I'm on
Yeah.
properties.
Yeah. And it's
Like,
like,
what is this camera even doing here? Like, what? Like,
and then they're like, well,
here in time.
I don't have good deer on camera, blah, blah, blah. It's like, well, I get it because the camera placement is not good. It would
Yes.
like you cannot you're never gonna have a pattern to hunt off of that camera, or if they're all like this, like, yeah, we're
Or they're all sitting over a feeder.
right. Like your information is skewed from the start. So a lot of, again, what we're saying is we're trying to make a statement based on the fact that, like, again, skill and knowledge of even where to place a camera in the first part is wide ranging, right? But there's a plate, there's still the statement still is true, regardless of if your cameras are all in the right locations and you're getting good information from them, and let's just say semi-consistent activity. I'm still only allowing that camera information to influence my hunt decision making to a certain degree.
Yeah.
Like there's still a point where I can only say, okay, good. I know that deer's in the area. I haven't gotten him in 2 days. It doesn't bother me.
Not at
He's in
all.
there. I just need to hunt it. And then today, based on these conditions, I need to hunt that area like this. Or it might be, I can't go in there because even without having them on camera, that area doesn't allow me to go in and hunt that way. I need to stay out and wait for another day. Maybe I get the deer on camera, or maybe I don't. Regardless, even with good placement, there's still a degree of just like hard stop is I need to use my own brain and not just what I receive through my cell phone and my app to determine if I go hunting or not. Like
I mean,
you
how
got
many
cameras.
times have you been sitting there and you've got a trail camera out and you've seen 10 deer and
Every time.
one deer didn't walk by the camera?
Every time. Or
I mean,
how about this? How about this? You're sitting there and whether it's a food plot edge or it doesn't matter. You're sitting there and you can see where a camera's at and a deer walks past and your camera doesn't get it.
doesn't get it. Yeah, that's happened. Yeah, for sure. For sure.
And it's like, well, I never got a picture of that thing and I saw it. Guess
Yeah.
what, guys? That happens. Good cameras, bad cameras, it doesn't matter.
Absolutely.
That does happen. But what happens, yes, more so than that, is you're sitting there and you're like, dadgum, I saw 10 deer today. But your cameras are slow.
Yeah.
And you're sitting there head scratch. It's like, yes, because you've relied so much from a distance of that camera and be like, you're just relating what showed up on camera or did not show up on camera to gauge that activity. Again, it can influence and it can say certain things, but only to a certain degree. You're always going to see more with your eyes and your head because one, you can see farther than that camera.
Yeah.
You can see 360 around a tree. That camera is looking one single direction.
Yeah. And if you're in my case, it's like I'm a cheap wad, and I've got my cameras. I don't have them set to video. I've got my camera set to, well, they're taking a picture every 1 minute,
Yep.
and that's it. And so I don't ever do videos, and I'm running them on scrapes. Even during a rut, I don't even change it. I just need to know every now and then there's a deer in there. And so like
I'll figure out the rest.
I will watch a deer come work a scrape, and it'll be like a little scrub buck or something. And then 30 seconds later, here comes the big buck walking by.
Yeah.
My camera misses it.
Yeah.
Like that happens all the time. And you could go and spend as much money as you want to spend on all that kind of stuff, but like to me, it's not worth it. And sometimes I will honestly say this, sometimes you don't go hunting because you don't have a target buck on camera.
It
It's like
becomes
you're
there's a
hunting
point
with
where
cameras, and you're the thrill of what's going to walk around the corner has been lost in a lot of times because we rely so much on a camera because he hadn't shown up or whatever. It's like I enjoy hunting public land sometimes because I don't run cameras on public land whatsoever. And I think, man, what monster's fixing to walk around the corner next? So
There's a point, Alan, here where the trail camera should be equipping you to make a decision
yes.
instead of handicapping you from experiencing hunting. Like
Correct.
there's a point where
Bingo.
people like you should use it to help influence a decision. And that decision ultimately shouldn't be don't go. That should be influenced based on access and wind, right? Not what you see or what you don't see on the camera. That's where it becomes a handicap because you're trying to rely too much on it and it's holding you back.
Yeah,
Don't let it
no.
hold you back. Let it influence you to go. That's when, again, the conditions, the day-to-day situations, the access, just the general woodsmanship of knowing the resources, what's hot, what's not, is going to tell you I need to be here like today. Like today is the situation. I mean, I can think of like, gosh, there's so many situations where let's just say you're hunting a food plot pattern and then you get like a 2 days of 20, 30 mile an hour winds in October and a bunch of acorns fall. Well,
Yeah.
I don't have red oak acorns this year. I got white oaks. Well, guess what? Your camera's probably gonna, you're not gonna get them those the next 4 or 5 days. Guess what? Because he's on white oaks. Where in that general area are there good white oaks? Go hunt that. Like that's the perfect situation where it's like, hey, if you just rely, like you're missing out on good opportunities. And that's why this is also why people are like, he's nocturnal.
Yeah.
No, he's not. I promise. He's probably not. He's
I will
only
say that
nocturnal where your camera's at.
they may be nocturnal if their camera's set up over a feeder.
Yeah. It's painful. So we're obviously passionate about the topic because we haven't even gotten to the rest of the kills. But tell me about Reed's Giant in South Alabama because I want to hear that one too.
Yeah, so this one, man, I got a picture of him. I didn't put cameras out this year until September down there. I went down for the dove hunt, and everything that got planted this year was corn. And he showed up in one location, and they came in 2 days after I hung the camera, harvested the corn, and didn't get another picture of him. I'm like, oh man. So I was like, all right. I went back down a couple weeks later, and I knew based on what I'd seen in Tennessee and North Alabama, man, our oak trees were just absolutely raining acorns.
Yeah.
Well, there's a 60-acre old field unit right off in the dead center of my property. It's basically where I house every deer on the property. And
Right.
that old field unit has just the old historic fence line, and also state line is nothing but a bunch of just big, ancient, old oak trees, a lot of red oaks. And I checked them and I'm like, oh my goodness, like these things are loaded to the gills. I hung couple of cameras and made mock scrapes right at the corner where I normally get them traveling and stuff. Well, I found where he bounced to. So I get a picture of him. Reed's all excited, and I'm like, nah, that deer's okay. I'm like, nah, he don't really look like he's all that old. I know the deer really well. I had pictures of him last year, and actually in February, I saw the deer in December last year. Could have killed him, and I let him walk. He's probably 130s, high 130s, and but in February that deer looked like absolute death. He was so
Really?
ran down. Really, really skinny, bony looking. I'm like, and a lot of the bucks were like that last year. And why they were like that, I don't know, because they had cover crops knee deep. Just the conditions, I think they were rough going into the winter last year. But anyway, so get a picture of him. I'm like, yeah, he's okay. Reed sees he goes, oh my gosh, Daddy, that thing is huge. Like, okay. He goes, I want to hunt that deer. I want to hunt that deer. That's the only deer I want to kill. I want to hunt that deer. And that's all he talked about. I mean, he just went on and on every day. He asked me, Dad, did you get a picture of that buck? And I'm like, yeah, here he is. And last week we were taking Santa pictures. And he's like, Reed, what are you going to ask Santa for? He's like, I don't know. And so he didn't ever think about it. And then first thing he said when he got on up there to talk to Santa, he said, well, what do you want for Christmas, sonny boy? And he goes, Santa, I want you to give me your good spirit to go help me kill this big buck in Aliceville. And he's like, he just like looked at him like, what? And
That's funny.
he said, that's all I want for Christmas. And so
I want to shoot one of your reindeer.
yeah, that's exactly what he said. He said, I
Yeah.
want to kill the reindeer. He looks like a reindeer. Well, so I start trying to we go down for the youth hunt, which is the 15th of November. And he had shown up 3 days in a row earlier that week. But that was that really hard cold snap we had,
Yep.
really cold north winds. I'm like, well, a north wind is kind of tricky at this spot. It sort of threads the needle. But the day we hunted the youth weekend, it was 80 something degrees. South winds. Of course, we see like 20 something deer, but he don't show up.
Yep.
We come back for the first part of Thanksgiving week. I actually send Rebecca. She's finally got back into hunting since we've had Ripley. It's the first year she's hunted since we had Ripley, and so she's excited. I'm gonna set her in that stand. Maybe she'll kill him.
Yeah.
She sees 20 deer, doesn't see him, so he doesn't kill him. And of course, Reed was over there just like. He was
Oh,
fit to
yeah.
be tied because he wants to kill that deer so bad. In which where we hunted, I hunted on a different side of that thicket, and I thought this could be another spot he could show up. I didn't have a camera there, but I was like, he could show up here too. And so we basically surrounded the thicket that day, but he didn't show. And the only time I noticed when I saw that deer at this spot, it was a pretty high quality day with a north wind. And so Thursday after I killed that buck at home, I was like, Reed, tomorrow's the day. You're gonna kill him tomorrow. We've got cold air. It's a really good quality day. Onyx says 90 something percent chance
Right.
for the deer movement or whatever. And I was like, that's the days he's shown up before. So we're gonna take and we
In
have it
daylight.
in daylight, yeah. Or period, like he doesn't even
Or
show
just
up at dark on
gotcha,
any other
gotcha.
days. So we I said, Reed, we've got a thread the needle wind, and we drove down that day. He didn't even have time to take a scent-free shower or none of that kind of stuff. And I'm like, we're gonna get in a shooting. We got a ladder stand and a shooting house to hunt, and the ladder stand's actually a lot better spot. It's a little bit easier shots, and I like the spot a little bit better than the house. But I said, Reed, we can't sit in that ladder stand. I said, I'm afraid this wind is too close to threading the needle to sit the ladder stand. We're going to have to sit the shooting house.
Right.
Far shot for a kid to the edge of the tree line that he's coming to. It's a 184 yard shot, and we get in the shooting house and we keep the windows closed the whole time. We've already seen like 20 deer. He still hadn't shown up. I said, Reed, these two bucks came out, and I said, "Reed, I said, I think he's fixing to come. I said, I have seen him with those two bucks before. I said, so go ahead and get your gun and get ready. I said, don't open the window until he shows up. And when he shows up, you better be ready." Sure enough,
Right.
like he always does, right at dark, he shows up and he's feeding on acorns. And I said, "Reed," and he was facing straight at us. I said, "We don't have much time. We've got maybe 5 minutes to get it done." I said, "So you get steady on him. Go ahead and open the window. Get steady on him." I said, "The moment he shows you his shoulder, you better already be steady and ready to pull the trigger, because
Right.
we don't, if he may, he may only do it one time, and we don't have, we have to get out of here and not spook him." So sure enough, the deer stands there forever and finally gives him the shoulder and repumps one in him. And
Nice.
I said, as soon as he shot him, he's like, "Did I get him?" I was like, "Yeah, you got him." But I said, "If he stops, you better shoot him again." As soon as
Right.
he did, he ran about 30 yards and he stopped. And next shot, boom, drops the hammer on him. He just folded up right there. And he's like, I was like, "You got him, buddy. You got him." And I'm excited. And because I'm thinking, I still, the cameras misled me on how good this deer was.
Yeah.
So, I really thought he's a 184-pound deer,
Yeah.
probably scores 130, and
Yeah.
based off my camera pictures. And I was not extremely excited about this deer based off the pictures. And I said, I was like, "All right, let's go get him and everything." And we walk up to that deer, and I am like, "Oh my goodness, Reed, you just killed a giant!" Like,
Yeah.
the deer weighed 235 pounds. Like
Oh,
in the pictures, he looked like a 180-pound deer. Like,
that's 50 pounds off.
oh, I was way off,
Yeah,
way off.
but that can easily happen though.
And I think the deer was over 20 inches wide. I hadn't scored him yet, but the deer was over 20 inches wide. And I think the way that the frame on that deer and the pictures I had of him made his body look small.
It can deceive you for
I'm
sure.
thinking he's a 130-inch deer, and then looking at that, and then basing that off of what I think he is scores to
Sure.
what his body is, like I'm thinking, yeah, that's maybe
Yep.
a 4-year-old, 130-inch
Right.
deer, weighed 180 pounds, and that's my guess. And then I was totally off.
I love it. So in recapping, right? Really strong, good day. Like good from cold air, the right
North wind.
direction, good on pressure, good on, I think you said it was like a day after a red moon situation. How frequent was that deer on a camera itself?
Not very frequent at all. I got pictures of him. So it was like that cold front hit the 10th, 11th, and 12th. I had pictures of him.
Yep.
November 10th, 11th, and 12th. I didn't get another picture of him until, see, maybe the 18th he showed up. And then I never got another picture of him until we killed him.
Which would have been 24th?
Killed him on the Friday after Thanksgiving.
Oh, 28th? Yeah.
Yeah, that's how consistent he was.
And off and really inconsistent.
Yeah. So, but what consistencies that I had noticed was he only shows up to that field on a north wind.
Yep.
So, I mean that was my basis of
Yeah.
how to hunt that deer.
Looking for the correlations of wind direction in showing up.
Yeah, and I mean he literally, and he walked the tree line. It's like he stayed in the thicket the whole way until he stayed in there as long as possible until where he pops out. Like basically, it's the end of the field.
Sure.
So he basically scent checks the whole entire ag field. I mean, it's a 50-something acre ag field. You can't even
Sure.
cover it with a rifle.
Yeah,
But
yeah.
he doesn't pop out 200 yards away. He pops out at that corner every time. But it's like he stays in the thicket. Scent checks the whole
Yeah.
south end of it before he comes out into it.
Right. Dang.
Yeah, so again, not one that's like, oh, I'm expecting this deer to show up. He just, oh, he's just super random, or he's just nocturnal, blah, 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 blah. There's a pattern there, but like for an inconsistency, but there's a chink in the armor, if you will, and you identified it and were able to capitalize on it, and also be there under those conditions, right? To say, okay, hey, like this, if there's a chance, it's going to be under these conditions, and regardless of what the camera said the last 4 days, today's weather, today's wind is different. Let's go in there and let's get after it.
Had you been like, well, this deer's not showing up, so I'm gonna go hunt somewhere else or what, or hunt whatever.
Yep.
Like you have to like use your cameras to tell you a few things, you find a few correlations, and it's like then you're not reacting to, I got a picture of him, now I need to go hunt. It's no, he hasn't shown up all these days, so he's probably going to show up on this day. I need to be there before I get a picture of him.
Anticipation.
Anticipation is the key. It's like,
Yes.
well, I'm
If you
not
find
waiting to get
yourself.
another picture to go hunting. I'm going to go hunting because I had a picture.
Correct. That which for most people, and I really, really want people to hear this. They use the cameras and take that information and react to it instead of preliminary. Making a plan, right? Like they're not utilizing that full data that they get out of the cameras. It's yes, now I can go after him because I got a picture. Well, he already did show up. Like you missed that opportunity. And it's just receiving and perceiving that information. There's a wire loose in your head, and we need to readjust it. And here's three different cases. Essentially, in which you've got deer that are harvested that often a lot of people, if they were relied on cameras, would have missed those opportunities to harvest because they relied solely on information getting fed to them via trail cameras and not utilizing the woodsmanship skills and the full intel of what the cameras, when they do show up, condition-wise, are going to tell you or should tell you.
For sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, dude. I mean, I see it time and time again. And again, there's no way for us to completely capture every situation scenario, but each one of these was completely different. And many people, if they're honest with themselves, listen to this, would have missed out on those opportunities because of the heavy reliance on the trail camera to tell them what to do, where to be, instead of you connecting the pieces. It's like there's a puzzle to be solved, and the camera isn't going to complete the puzzle.
No,
And it takes
it's just
us.
a tool in the toolbox that
Yeah.
gives you enough information to go and have an idea of what part of the farm to hunt.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man.
Yeah, and
You
so
got
another
it.
thing is like I will say this too, is I've tried everything in the world as far as any kind of feed or anything like that. It is not consistent in Alabama of getting pictures of mature bucks. I mean, if somebody else, somebody may out there may get a lot of pictures of mature bucks over feed. I do not.
Right.
It is very rare. What I am running my trail cameras on are mock scrapes. And it may not be that every camera has a mock scrape, pretty much every one of them does. But if I hang a camera, it's in a mock scrape. Now, some of those mock scrapes are on food plots. Some of those mock scrapes are in transition areas. Some of those mock scrapes may be, pinch points. Whatever it is, I put a mock scrape in front of the camera, and that tells me when I've truly found where a deer wants to be, as opposed to throwing corn or anything like that, any kind of bait, that makes a deer come to a spot because of the bait. I want to know where a deer is because of where he wants to be. And that will tell you way more than ever putting out any bait or anything like that. And so especially for mature deer. Like I said, I have not had a deer that surprised me. Every deer we've ever killed, I've got multiple pictures of, and it's because I'm using my cameras over scrapes, transition zones, food plots, or maybe I just like the one deer I killed at home. I had a scrape on a food plot. He hadn't shown up to that scrape. I found his scrape, moved the camera to his scrape. So those are the things you need to look for when placing your trail cameras to tell you what deer are in the area and will give you a better understanding of how deer are using your property.
And then from there, you complete the picture. You put the
Exactly.
rest of the puzzle pieces together with
Don't let
given
the
information.
trail camera make you hunt or not hunt.
Yep.
Hunt because the time is right. It's time to go hunting. Let's go hunt. Don't worry or rely so much on trail cameras to mess
That's
you
it.
up. It can make you overthink things a lot of times.
Oh man. And when you get in that mindset, just know at that point, if you're there, you're missing opportunities.
Yeah.
You're missing opportunities.
No doubt.
Well, awesome, dude. Congratulations. Tell Reed we said congrats. Great harvest. I'm excited for you both. And this is, you still got a lot of season left to play out, man. A lot of season.
Long season, yeah. So sometimes I wish it could be shortened down just to save some bucks. But
Sure, no doubt.
yeah, we're just getting started.
Good deal. Good deal. Well, let's keep it coming. But guys, we appreciate everyone here this week listening, following along, getting great advice, and just appreciate you guys listening and following along. So we'll check you here next week.